Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are getting into a conversation. We are extending a conversation that we've been having, you know, for the last couple of months. Obviously, with the advent of platforms like ChatGPT late in 2022, a lot of people have been talking about what's going on in the world of artificial intelligence and AI. Investments in this space has been made for, you know, many years, but now it seems as if it's become, you know, more mainstream on a consumer level, more mainstream on a business level. And we're going to be chatting about how businesses can and should be using AI. What is the data showing us? What is some of the research showing us about what's going on out there? And we're going to be chatting with the team from IBM, who themselves have been getting their feet quite wet in the world of AI. You know, they've got their Watson platform amongst a host of solutions that they've been bringing to the market. So to make sense of it all, we are joined by Rhea Pinto, who is the country and technology lead for South Africa over at IBM. Rhea, greetings to you today.
Hi, Madiba. Good to chat to you today. And thank you for having me on your show.
Now, thank you so much, for being with us today, Rhea. I was actually, looking back to say that it had been, you know, a little bit of time since we last had you on this platform. And the last time we spoke, we're talking about, you know, banks. We're talking about some of the technology from that point of view. And, the world has changed quite a bit since you and I last spoke on this platform. AI is obviously a big thing. Everyone, their mother and their cat, you know, wants to get involved, in that particular space right now. As a technology leader, as someone who is engaging in technology, as a technology lead at IBM, when someone says AI, right? Maybe that's where we can start. What does AI mean to you? Is it machine learning? Is it the generative stuff? Is it deep fakes? Like, what are, you know, in your world, what does AI look like?
Okay, so I think AI is all of that. I mean, AI has been around, since the 50s, I think you sort of mentioned. So I think we've all become accustomed to AI. And if you think about it, we leverage AI in our daily work. I think what's created a lot of hype in the last, year or so is this generative AI, which is where large language models are able to learn and teach themselves, if that means. So it's just like a self-learning language model that you build for specific cases. So I think generative AI is what is driving a lot of hype and has the ability to really help clients accelerate their digital transformation if used correctly. But if you go back to AI, I mean, AI is consumed, either as AI assistants, AI chatbots. We've been infusing AI into many of our products. And, so it's where you're automating, either some business processes or some potential function. When you're doing searches, we're experiencing AI in our daily lives, the way we use our phones, Siri, for example, just to name some of the products. So AI has been around for a while. It's now this generative AI using large language models that is, I think, created a lot of hype. There's a lot of interest. And if you had to ask me, where are we in that journey? I heard an analogy, which I thought I'll share quickly. If this was a cricket game, we're in the first innings when it comes to generative AI.
No,
and I thought it was a great analogy to use.
I like that analogy because we could get into the weeds with it. Is this a test match? Is it 2020s? How big is this game that we're playing? And especially if we're saying that we're just in the first innings, right? It points to the fact that we are still young, young in the game. I think on my side, on that point where you're talking about it being the first innings, I look at all the various platforms that are out there right now, especially the generative ones that are making all the headlines. And I think to myself, this is the worst that the technology will ever be. And that's scary to me. When you think about it, from that point of view. But maybe we can get into the real meat and potatoes to say, with where we are in the journey, we are in our first innings. A lot of people are talking about this thing, but on a business level, from whatever engagements you're having, locally, globally, because IBM is probably one of the biggest, technology companies in the world, certainly a pioneer, for decades when it comes to a number of different areas. Are businesses worried about AI? Are businesses concerned about AI? Are businesses investing in AI? Are businesses aware that they need to have an AI strategy?
Yeah. So I think the first thing, let me add, is IBM's focus really is to drive AI for business. So our whole focus on AI is not around the commercial use, but more around AI for businesses and how we help businesses leverage what's available for them. When you talk about our clients aware, I think there's a huge awareness. I mean, this is, and I know recently IBM was at Davos. And, the key messages coming back is that for many CEOs and seniors, this is seen as a strategic enabler for them. There's a recognition that the right use if they're able to leverage the platform, it can give them, some business advantage. So big focus. So definitely critical and strategic. Many CEOs, though, are first trying to understand it better, understand where can they use it, because, we've seen lots of stuff in the press where, some models go rogue, if I can use that. So there's a big concern around, the guardrails, the data that you use. If I think about governance, some of the issues that they're worried about, a couple of things is integration and scaling challenges, because you're working with lots of data. The governance of that data, and in terms of, is it delivering what you're expecting in terms of the model? There's also a view on price, because if you're working with very large models, the computing required to drive that can become quite expensive. So is there an ROI? I'd say today in a lot of the conversations, clients are trying to understand it, and I'm talking more around the generative AI. I think we're seeing a lot of use cases where people are looking to use AI to drive productivity, to drive better customer interactions. But on the real big use of generative AI, it's really trying to understand what can it do, which business problem can it solve for me? How can I use it? And how can I ensure that I know what data I'm using, the guardrails I've put up in terms of the outputs I require? So there's a lot of playing and testing at the moment going on. And I have to be honest, I've never seen the amount of interest on any product line or technology as I'm seeing on this. So I think we're living in a really exciting time in the age of computing with what generative AI has brought to the fore.
Rhea, maybe just as a point of clarity, and an extension to what you were saying just now about, driving productivity, customer experiences, that type of thing. You made a mention just now about a distinction that IBM has made between commercializing, AI versus helping businesses with AI. Could you just talk to us about that distinction?
Well, I think it's really around people using AI to write papers so most of our stuff is around governing the data, so if you work as an enterprise and you are using an AI platform to make decisions and drive certain business processes for you, you need to be very clear around how you govern that. So most of our focus is around helping businesses run a platform. We launched What's Next, which is our AI and data platform, and we've got various modules on that. So that's where the business focus is how do we then help enterprises make sure that the models they're using, they understand where the data's come from, which data was used to train the models. Is there bias in the models? And that's really, as a commercial person, or as an individual, that doesn't worry you really, because you may be using it for personal functionality, but as a business, you really want to make sure that the way your model is used reflects the ethics and the values of the organization that you are. So you need to be able to govern that data and really be able to explain the provenance and be able to explain how the model got to the answer it did. You know, so what was the training? How did it actually get there? So you need to be able to explain it.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense for us, because what it points to is the fact that when a company gets into an AI discussion, it's not necessarily just we've gotten some AI into the company and it's going to do all our work for us. There needs to be a strategy, you know, around how businesses are making use of AI. There needs to be a strategy around what tools are actually being made use of. There's also needs to be a strategy just around what type of data are you using, where is it coming from, what are you doing with it, and, you know, is that, you know, within the guardrails of whatever you guys are actually permitted, you know, to do, you know, or do you bake AI into some of the products that you actually, you know, put out there, which then lends itself for me to say, in a situation where there's so much conversation about AI, right, one would assume that everyone is making use of AI, you know, through and through. But we know that that's not the case. People are still figuring out use cases. Some of the experts that we've engaged in, you know, the consensus is that 2023 was the year of AI awareness, and then 2024 is the year of actually implementing, coming up with the use cases and, you know, getting into there. And that then feeds into a discussion around the barriers, right? Because there's challenges. You're not just going to get an AI package off the shelf and then, you know, run it into your business. There's probably a lot of things that people have to overcome, you know, to actually make use of it. So in your view, what are some of the top barriers when it actually comes to implementation of AI in businesses?
Look, I think, I mean, as I mentioned, you can consume AI in various forms. So I think, you know, if you're looking for assistance or chatbots or automation or, you know, understanding the cost of your different IT elements, there's a lot of tooling or, you know, technology out there pre-built that address those requirements. If you're looking to use Gen AI models, you know, where you are bringing in lots of data, where you're teaching a model to self-learn and then generate the answers, there you need to then be very clear as to which model, or, you know, you need to really understand which model you're going to leverage, because there are many, many models out there. And then be very clear on the specific use case, because there are very large models that could be used for multiple use cases, but some of the data may not be relevant to your organization. So I think, you know, when you look at people using models and the data, I think the first thing is, what is the data that you're going to be using? You know, where's that data going to come from? Are you going to buy a model and then train it with your data? Or are you just going to use the data that you bought in the model that you're selecting? So those are things you really need to think about in terms of the potential use case you're working for. I think the other thing about Gen AI is you also need to be able to reimagine workflows end to end, you know, beginning to end. And what we're finding here is that it's requiring more than just an IT specialist. You know, it's requiring people who have real knowledge in the business unit or in the business process to rethink about how would I, you know, if we had to really optimize this or make it very customer friendly, because at the end of the day, it's about your end user, how could I change that business process? So it's requiring a lot of creativity. And then you take that and you then, you know, teach the model to sort of do that. So it's really forcing people to think about solving, or should I say, reimagining the ways of work or reimagining business processes. And so one of the things is, of course, you have to lead with expertise in that business process. And then every use case, you have to do the numbers. Is there an ROI? Because you could, you know, one of the things we've seen is certain pilots, you know, have been really interesting, but the cost of implementing them far outweighs the ROI, you know, because the models are big, the compute required is very expensive. So there has to be an ROI in the use case. You know, does it accelerate your time to value? You know, does it increase productivity? Does it eliminate errors by a certain percentage? You know, so that ROI has to be clear. And then, of course, most critical is then how are you going to govern this? So governance around the data, how, you know, understanding how it gets to its end result, being able to test it, you know, so having the guardrails in place that prevent your model from, you know, coming up with its own answers that have nothing to do with, you know, the business process that it's been put in place for. So that requires a lot of thinking and teams working together to test, which I think is why it's taken a bit longer for some of the models to really go into production, because there's a lot of work being done to ensure that we don't end up, you know, like some consumers, I mean, some organizations have on the in the front page of the press because their models came up with its own answers that had nothing to do with the organization. And I'm sure you've seen some of those cases, which have been quite interesting.
When it comes to what's going on in the world of business and actually implementing this AI, like, you know, what you're talking about, I want to delve a little bit deeper and pick your brain on the return aspect, right? Because people measure return on investment in different ways. Some of it can be, you know, tangible. You know, we put X amount into this, into our AI investment, and over time, business outputs have, you know, returned us X. You know, this is our return on the investment that we've put in. In certain cases, it's intangibles. You know, the fact that someone comes to an IBM, you know, not because there's a specific, you know, amount they're willing to put in, but maybe they like something like a Watson and they're like, okay, cool. This is, you know, this is the platform that, you know, we want to use because of the functionality. And just, you know, maybe bring it back to IBM to say, you guys have something like Watson. You know, how have you guys, you know, gone about making use of a tool like that, you know, internally? Because I'm pretty sure that in whatever discussion you'll be having with businesses, you know, they'll be actually wondering to say, oh, you guys have, you know, an AI platform. How are you guys actually making use of something like this?
So I think firstly, I think it's key to note that our AI platform is open and runs on, and we are a big supporter of hybrid cloud, which means it allows clients to run the platform wherever they decide is best fit for them. In terms of, I mean, as I mentioned, we've been putting automation into our tools for a long time. But what we've also done with the generative AI, or using AI in terms of use case within IBM, is we first applied it to our HR division. Because if you imagine, we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the globe, and often they have issues either with trying to understand simple things like take leave, maybe they knew, you know, understand their pay slip, if they're a manager, understand how to onboard staff and stuff. So AskHR was our first platform. And what that's able to do is actually reduce the number of professionals we need on phone calls actually helping staff do it. So as a user of the platform, it is very easy for me to go onto this AskHR platform, tell it what I needed to do, and it goes into the background and does it all for me and then sends me a result. So it's taken away hours of, you know, of weight of time in just doing that. I mean, human resources, you know, we talk about 40% improvement in process productivity. And we can share with you the IBM use case. So this has been for us the strongest. What we've also done at IBM, and we're using IBM as client zero, if I can call it that, is we've also then, you know, rolled it out to IT. So help desk support, you know, you get a new machine, you're trying to set it up. So we've now got an Ask IT bot as well. And of course, it's been taught with all the history we have around, you know, use cases and the type of questions that our staff call in with. So we're now able to resolve an IT problem, you know, so we don't have big departments who we go to sort this out. We become self-sufficient. So you actually put the power in the hands of the user to be able to quickly log on, go into Ask IT. It tells you, you tell them what the problem is that you're having, and it tells you the couple of things you need to go and check. And I've also used it, and it's awesome. I don't have to go and find a friend around the passage to help me fix the problem on my machine. So that's the other area. We are rolling it out to sort of areas in procurement. Is one, and also quote to cash, you know, where we you know, look at pricing. Of course, it's our quote to cash end-to-end process, and how do we make that more efficient, and how do we also remove user mistakes from that process? So those are the areas that we're busy, you know, we've rolled out and are using. It's an area that we're finding a lot of interest in for many of our clients. And I think it's also supporting the knowledge worker, because, you know, we have a massive skill shortage in Africa and around the globe, you know, where people are doing other roles, or they don't have the institutional knowledge in an account or in a client with people moving. So how do we capture that so that we are able to seamlessly continue supporting the client and, of course, our own staff in how they do their work? I know that in our consulting business, they're looking at leveraging it for project management. So it's all about how do we help them be more efficient and reduce some of the manual work that they've had to do, which takes hours out of their day, and focus them on things that provide higher value to the clients and to the staff.
Yeah, most certainly good to see some of the use cases internally, because at least you guys have, you know, been testing yourselves out. I like that term of, you know, being client zero, when mm-hmm. when it comes to some of these platforms, just so that you guys can see what actually works and doesn't work in practicality, you know, before taking something out to market or at least implementing something, for a business or for a client. And that particular use case around the institutional knowledge, I think that one is probably very key. Fortunately, unfortunately, it does take a certain level of, I think the youth would say, admin, because, you have to have your processes documented. You need to have, your data sets in order, right? Like an IT process, you're talking about IT just now to say, you know, instead of calling someone, you can just go onto this thing. You need to have firm sets of data underneath that, underpinning that around, you know, what do you do in this case? How do you do that? So I think for a lot of businesses, that's probably a big part of what they do. And I think for small businesses in particular, that's probably an area that they would, have to improve themselves, go out, document some of these things, make sure that your data sets are there so that you can make the best use, of the AI that's there. And on the point of, data and the data that you're using, we have the point of ethics. Since time immemorial, we've been talking about, technology and the ethics around it. And now I think all of that discussion has been intensified, by the use of AI. A couple of days ago, I had a meeting with the CEO. In his office was a painting that had been it's a beautiful painting, canvas, everything. But he was telling me the story behind the painting, and apparently the artist generated the painting using Midjourney, which is a image generation tool.
Yes.
And there were issues around, this was entered into an art competition. It won the competition. But when they found out that it was actually generated by AI, the prize was revoked. And you get into all types of, gray matter around, is AI a tool? Is it truly a generator? Is the human really still in control of the process? All of these, things, ethical discussions, all just these philosophical debates that people are, grappling with. So from that point of view, then, businesses, 2024, where we are right now, what are the key concerns, when it comes to, the ethics discussion? I can imagine data sovereignty, because that's been, on people's minds, ever since the cloud days. Where are we right now when it comes to ethics and that type of thing around AI?
Look, I think it's evolving. I think, you'll see, many countries, organizations are getting together to sort of set and make sort of guidelines on how to use AI, how to test it. I mean, I think it's got to be transparent, which means you need to understand, where did the data come from? How did you build the model? And so there are entities, and IBM is part of that journey, working with many, many organizations and country regulators around, what are the what are the guardrails we need to put in place? So what are the things that organizations need to be considering before they deploy a model? I think the other thing is, with AI, the governance element you need to think about first before you build. So with a lot of other technology, often you build it, like, for example, security, and then you plug it on. Well, doesn't always work like that. But with AI, you really need to think about how you're going to govern this. What is the data you're going to use? Is it trusted? Is it transparent? Is it responsible? You know, and are we governing that? So I think it's evolving. I don't think that many countries are there yet, especially in Africa. I think they're thinking about it. We're also looking to see what's happening in the rest of the world. But there's a lot going on in this space to make sure that when we use Gen AI, that we understand exactly how it, you know, how we got to the end result. So, you know, you talk about that painting. I think had somebody gone back and looked at the governance, they would have picked up autumn, you know, right early on, that we are potentially leveraging data that is in the public domain, you know, may have some rights attached to it that we should not be using in our model, for example. And I'm being, you know, sort of hypothetical there. So those are the critical elements. Is the model you're taking in, can you explain how you got the data, where it came from, how you trained the model? Can you then, you know, demonstrate the use case? How, you know, what data did it leverage to come up with the output that it's putting together? And most organizations who are bringing out large language models are focusing on being able to do that. Not everybody's there, but it's about being able to be responsible, governed, transparent. I think the provenance of the data critical, but as I said, there will be standards. I mean, there are already entities have, there is a governing entity that has made some of that available or is working on something like that. And there is many organizations have signed up to being part of that so that there are global standards or at least within country standards that we are asking our businesses to adhere to in terms of the models they bring to market. But it's evolving. You know, people are learning. You know, we're learning. As I said, we are early in the stages, but of generative AI adding value. But yeah, it's ongoing conversations. You know, people are asking, when I start building a model, what are the things I need to be thinking about? And it all starts with the data. And then how you're going to be using it and how you're going to be training it.
No, definitely.
And then how you're going to be checking it.
And when it comes to, you know, those items that you've just mentioned now, how are you going to be using it? How are you going to be training it? There's a skills discussion that also needs to be there. Someone who would have been listening to this discussion might think that a lot of things are going over my head. This sounds very complex. You guys are talking about all this technology. It sounds like it's very sophisticated and it's going to come and take my job. You know, all of these, notions that people typically have. Earlier on, you said that, you see AI as a tool that can help the knowledge worker, right? So I think the natural question from a skills, point of view is, you know, what's the approach, right? Does a person in 2024 have to go out, you know, into the world and learn how to, you know, code an AI model for themselves? Or are we just at the stage where we need to educate ourselves about how to get the most out of, an AI platform? I was reading the other day that, one of the jobs that has come out, you know, into prominence over the last half year to a year is prompt engineers, people that can effectively type the things into the box that will make the best, you know, result come out. So keen to get your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And so last year, what IBM did, because, you know, to your point, I think we're all looking at this and sort of being skeptical about how am I going to use it? What is it, you know, how's it going to affect my job? So one of the things that IBM did was we ran sort of a hackathon, if I can call it that. So we made the platform available to all IBMers, regardless of what role. And we gave them certain use cases that they could consider and got them to play with it. And I mean, you know, I participated as well. You did not have to be an IT person. And it was really around thinking, if this is my problem, I mean, it could be simple things like summarizing paragraphs. Or it could be something around, I have a question on a particular area. So ingesting the data around the area you want to then quiz the tool on or the model on. So it got us to play with it. And what they did was it created an awareness of the power, firstly, of the technology, and secondly, how we could be creative, because we're going to be doing things very differently to how we've done in the past. So it's an evolving area. And I think it requires that people gain access. So that's one of the things we're doing, is making the platform available for people. Gain access, play with it. Think about what problem you're trying to solve. How could this help you in your day to day? I mean, if you look at some organizations where they have lots of policy documents, you know, and they want a quick question on a particular policy, and I'm just using the AI portion, wouldn't it be wonderful to just type in basic English? So it's English, you know, tell me about this. How do I find out, you know, what I need to be thinking about when I'm doing this policy or when I'm doing this pricing? And it automatically gives you the items to go and look at. So that saves you hours in terms of just reading the documentation. And I'm giving you a very simple plan. So yes, people will have to relearn new ways of working, but it's all about getting in, playing with it. I mean, I don't know if you've played with ChatGPT in terms of asking it to give you a definition of something or summarize, but that's the type of thing that, you know, gets people onto the platform, playing with it. Of course, once you take it into a business environment, it's really, what business process am I looking to change? And how do I do that differently? What data do I use? Prompt engineers, I think with the more complex cases, prompt engineers are definitely going to become, you know, a key profession. And I think we'll see loads of new professions arising from this new era of computing. You know, new skills, new ways to look at things. And it's not necessarily programmers. Yes, you will definitely need very specialized program, but you're also going to need really, you know, I guess people who really understand the business that they're in, really understand the processes that they drive, and can reimagine doing that in a slightly different way that takes out, you know, many of the, I guess, hoops, delays, reduce the time to an answer, because that's what we want. You know, I think the world is moving so quickly. People, consumers want answers quickly. They don't want to wait for a week. They want answers in a couple of seconds or in a couple of days. So what do I do? How do I use AI to help me achieve that without putting the organization at risk, making sure I leverage the right data, and that I can, you know, do checks, spot checks, govern it so that I get to that outcome quickly. And also, I think it's about consumers then gaining trust that then when they are dealing with the platform, they trust the answers they're getting. So it requires a different level of knowledge within the model to be able to fulfill the end user's needs. Because, I mean, I'm sure you know right now, sometimes when you call an organization and you want to help and you get a chatbot, you automatically want to speak to somebody because it's not giving you what you want. So it's how do we improve that so that when you get onto that platform, you can get your questions answered to your satisfaction. It really knows it knows the data you're putting, it knows what you're looking for, and you actually don't need to speak to somebody.
I completely agree with you there. I've had a couple of chatbot interactions in the last month and a half, with one of the banks, and it is quite frustrating because I'll be trusting that, you know, I'm here for the technology, I'm typing my questions, and it seems to be helping me, but it reaches some critical point, and then it's like, oh no, I need to hand you over to a human being now. And it's like, but okay, why did we have this interaction if you weren't going to help me, you know, all the way? So the utility.
Yeah, and that's where generative AI will, because the bot will go and learn. It'll understand what you're looking for and go and find the data within the guardrails and governance that organization has put in place.
No, definitely. And so maybe that's where we can end off. You spoke quite a bit about, yourself getting, immersing yourself in the tools, how they work, and, you know, the types of problems that they can solve. And where I wanted to end off is to maybe for yourself, you know, obviously you've got bias because you're in the world of technology, but if you're talking to a technophobe, you know, someone who's, afraid of the technology, because fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of decision makers are, you know, of an older generation, people that are not as attuned to technology or might still be comfortable with the old way of doing things, right? What's the encouragement? What's the way to get someone like that to actually go and try out a ChatGPT, a Watson, you know, any one of these platforms? Because they're already, you know, a bit iffy about the technology before we even get to AI.
Look, I think everybody uses a cell phone. Most people do. If they do, you know, they search for information. Some of them, I think, since COVID, do all their shopping on there. So that's already a good use of AI. I mean, I'm just in context. I think sometimes it's our perception of what it potentially is, but we're all using it today. You know, we all, you know, some cars will, you know, guide you ways, for example. I mean, so it'll plot where am I going, and it tells me how to get there. I trust that. So it's about really just experiencing it and also understanding that it's not something new. We already are using AI. We already exposed to it. We're just not aware of it. In our everyday lives, as I said, if you use the phone, there's probably the area that most people are already using it. Yeah, I think even the older generation, I find they've become, because the apps on those phones have become so easy to use, people are leveraging it for a lot of things that, you know, maybe 15 years ago they weren't. So that's the initial access. And then it's just about downloading it and playing with it. I don't know if that answers, but I think my response is they're already using it. They just don't know. So it's about, don't be scared. Just explore something different, you know. And I am finding that a lot of the older generation are really impressed by what they get back. But I think you've got to be open to using technology. And if you're using a PC or an iPad or a computer or a phone, you're already exposed to it.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion, you know, just talking to Ria about what's going on in the world of AI from an IBM point of view. Obviously, a huge technology pioneer. And when it comes to the world of artificial intelligence and AI, you know, she was just leading us through some of IBM's thinking, you know, when it comes to AI. A couple of key things that she spoke about is the fact that, you know, there is a difference, you know, between using AI for productivity gains versus commercializing it. And that's one of the things that they're helping businesses with, you know, just understanding where, you know, this technology can fit, you know, into your own business, into your own processes, which tools are actually appropriate, you know, for you out there. Because as we said, this is the year in which we're seeing a lot of tools coming out into the market, underpinned by, you know, these large language models, you know, algorithms, you know, big data sets, and, you know, to say, okay, what's appropriate for your business? What works? What doesn't work? How do we tailor it, you know, for your business? Also talking about the fact that in a lot of cases, you do need to, you know, maybe throw the technology out there. That's the approach that IBM, you know, took for itself. As much as they're helping other businesses, you know, they've made their own platforms widely available internally, and they've made them, you know, open, you know, just so that internally people know how and when to use these things, so that in their own work they can realize the gains, you know, of the technology. So when you go out and you evangelize around a particular platform, you're not talking about it from an abstract point of view, but there's also a practicality that underlies, you know, what's being spoken about. And then also just getting into the ethical considerations, because that's a huge issue. If you're going to make a big investment in AI, you do need to understand, you know, where the ethics are. I like something that she said, to say when it comes to AI, other than other technology implementations, you are best served in this world with the governance leading your implementation, as opposed to the governance coming, you know, towards the tail end. Because with other technology solutions, I think she used the example of cybersecurity. You create the solution and then you can maybe consider, you know, how to put the guardrails on it. But when it comes to AI, think governance first, and then everything else can then inform, everything else that happens from there. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Rhea Pinto. She is the country and technology lead for IBM, in the region, just giving us some insight into the world of AI, AI investment, and AI implementation. Rhea, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Badiwe. And it's been a good conversation. Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.